We'll speak with one of the legendary voices of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Network, Howdy Bell. I'm Pat Sullivan, and this is another IndyCast. Well, Howdy was looking at some historic pictures on the monitor here, and Howdy, we're reminiscing a little bit about the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Radio Network, and of course, you were one of the voices. Talk about your years there.
Well, it was 41 wonderful years that I was actually on the network, and of course, I'm still out here the whole month of May doing what I've always done, except that 3.5 hour span when the broadcast is taking place. Matter of fact, I still get my credentials through the network. I'm kind of like a utility ball player where if they needed someone on race day, I guess they know I'm out here and would be available if such a case arose. But, well, the story is it's really kind of neat. I had Doug Zink was an old friend of mine who was went to Butler together, and he was working at WIRE Radio 1430 back in those days. I was down in Shelbyville, Indiana, and Mike calls me one day and says, "Would you like to come up here and work in the news department for 6 months?" I said, "Well, tell me more." And he said, "Well, Mike Ahern, who's anchor here at Channel 8 for decades, Mike Ahern is going into the military on a 6 month program they used to have in those days. And we need somebody to just fill in for that 6 months, no commitment beyond that." Okay, fine, I'll do it. So I came up, and it turned out that they kept me after the 6 month commitment. They kept me at WIRE. One day, Mike went in from February to August of 62. And one day I got a phone call, and it was Sid Collins. And I thought, that's interesting. Why is Sid Collins calling me? And he said, "Well, I've heard you on the air, and I've heard you do play-by-play, and I hear you're a race fan, and would you be interested in filling in for Mike Ahern this year?" Yeah, really. I had never dreamed that I would ever have an opportunity to be on the radio network. But that happened. You hear Jenkins talking about ever since he was a young guy, he dreamed about being on the radio. That never happened. I just figured, I'd probably never be asked or have an opportunity, so that was okay. So I did that for the 1 year, and then I don't know if somebody resigned or if they created a place or whatever, but I was asked to stay on and did 40 more races, which is the record for one of the play-by-play kind of people. Luke Walton had the old record of 38 races, and I was 41, and Chuck Marlowe's 39, and the only active guy that possibly could catch us would be that old Jerry Baker guy. I think this is his 34 or 35th year on the network, so he's got a little ways to go to catch me.
So your first official race was 63?
62. 62, the one Roger Ward won, and then Roger later on became a friend when he worked with us on the network, and we had Len Sutton and Freddie Agobasian, and a lot of those guys did it for a lot of years. Now, every year or two, they've got somebody else doing it, but those guys stayed with us for many years, and then we became good friends with his son, Roger, and it was neat to get to know them later in a different way than you do when they're race drivers, and they're different people when they've quit racing.
As a tease to this, Howdy, I made a comment that I know you've heard many times, and that is that for many of us, I'm from Kansas City, our exposure to the Indianapolis 500 was the radio broadcast, and it was your job to present a vivid picture of what happened here on race day, and I think you guys did a marvelous job of that.
Well, I appreciate that, and we really tried to. We tried to do what we call a little imagineering in the mind, let the people visualize the bright sunny skies the beautiful colors on the cars and make a color picture for them so they could visualize it in their mind. And it was always a pleasure. And back in those days, they would tell us, it was before television, they'd tell us that we had, at any given minute during the radio broadcast, there were 100 million people listening to us around the world. And that was substantiated by ratings. And people would say, "Well, how do you talk to that many people?" I said, "I don't. I talk to one person. And let the rest of them just kind of join in and listen if they like." But that was the neat thing about it. And, I was blessed because I worked several positions. I was in turn two probably the most years, backstretch. I did the rundowns in the tower for 10 years. I was in the pits 1 year, hospital 3 years. So we did a whole variety of stuff.
You mentioned that you talked to one person, but given the number you just mentioned, the number of people who are listening, race day, was it excitement or was it anxiety?
Well, I think it's a little of both for me, actually, because I always got really nervous in the beginning of the broadcast. I really did. It was just like a ball player. Sammy Davis reportedly said something years and years ago, if you're in any form of entertainment, and this is a form of entertainment, sports and all that, and he said, if you're not excited before the event, you probably better get out of the business. And I always found myself to get nervous, actually, just like a big ball game or something. Hey, this is the world's largest sporting event, the world's largest radio network, and it was just, I love the beginning, all the pomp and circumstance that goes on up to gentlemen start your engines. It's just so exciting. I still get excited about it. It's just so cool, just really neat.
Now, obviously, it would appear to a layperson that Sid had something scripted or built in that he used as a framework. So how much of that is kind of built into a script, and how much of what happened in those years was spontaneous?
Well, those of us generally around the track were spontaneous. Sure. And now I think Jim Shelton in turn four, who was Sid's buddy, always had a scripted introduction for Sid. Now, Sid may have written it, I don't know. But there was always a scripted introduction there. But Sid, like the obituary he did on the air for Eddie Sachs, that was ad-libbed. And it was one of the finest obituaries you could ever hear about anybody in that situation. But Sid was more of a showman. Sid liked to make a show out of it instead of a play-by-play coverage of the race. And Sid enjoyed having the governor on, and he enjoyed having the president of Firestone and, you know, whatever. President of Ford. Here's Benson Ford, ladies and gentlemen. Glad to have you with us today, Mr. Ford. You know, that sort of thing, where I think it has evolved now pretty much to an actual play-by-play of the event. And now they still have a few guests pop up, and they should. But it was, Sid liked to have the celebrity aspect of it as well.
You mentioned that you had come from play-by-play, so was that a tension with you? In other words, did you come from a pure play-by-play background and find the entertainment side a little onerous to deal with?
No, not really. I was basically doing news, and, you know, sports is kind of a subtopic of news. And in Shelbyville, I did some sports, and when I came to WIRE, we were doing a high school game of the week, and Ahern and I did some of the games together. Because Mike used to do play-by-play, and we did some games together, and I always enjoyed doing play-by-play. And when I was at Channel 6 and WFBM, we did a high school game of the week, and we'd do Indiana Central basketball and Butler basketball before all the college networks came into existence. But I really enjoy, I still have, as recently as what, I guess 2 years ago, I was doing high school football up in Crawfordsville. So that's fun. I enjoy the high school sports scene.
A lot changed in the period of time that you were on the air regularly. You saw a 150-mile-an-hour lap with Pernelli. You saw the 200-mile lap. You saw Janet Guthrie come. You saw A.J. Ford's fourth victory. A lot of things have happened over that span of time.
Oh, no question. And that's just a few of them. Now, you know, the Janet Guthrie, Corey Witherell, the first Native American, Willie T. Ribbs, first Black American, Hiro Matsushita, first Japanese guy, maybe the first Asian. I'm not sure about that. But the transition from the roadsters to the rear engine cars, the Granatelli turbine, then to the wedges, 20, 40, and 60 were the numbers, I remember. The wedges, and we had the rear engine cars with no wings, and then the rear engine cars with all kinds of wings, and you know, turn them upside down, they'll fly. And so, you know, all of these transitions happened in those 41 years, and now it's kind of settled down a little bit. We don't have the surges in speed that we used to have, because it's they're trying to keep the cost down, for heaven's sake, and it's still very expensive. And I heard at lunchtime, I was at a luncheon where Sarah Fisher was there, and she was talking about to run the whole circuit, $10 million a year. I didn't know it escalated that much, but I've also heard a number that you could run the minimum kind of a deal for the season, 17 races, for about $3.5 million. So in any event, it's still a lot of money.
I'm sure you've been asked this many times, but most memorable race for you personally?
Well, I answer it this way. The most memorable race was my first one, because I never really anticipated ever being on the network. So that is so memorable. I mean, it was just, wow, how did I get here, you know? And then I think Foyt's fourth win for me, because I was always a Foyt fan. The thing about AJ, and probably everybody knows this, but, the guy, I saw him at Terre Haute once break his own midget, bought a midget, set it up, they made him start at the back, and he still won the doggone race. I mean, and Tony Stewart's kind of like a little A.J. Foyt in that regard, you know. There was an old joke went around here years ago that Foyt could take a jackass and win the Kentucky Derby. Now, I don't think that's quite true, but it made for a good story. Of course, one of the other exciting things that happened was I was working turn two, and we had Tom Sneva crash over there after he caromed off of, I can't think of his name right now. I'll think of it. But anyway, he caromed off of that, went up into the fence, and the car broke in two, and I thought he was going to be fried right there, and he raced the next weekend in Milwaukee. But I got to report that to the world and swallowed the mic.
You know, you mentioned A.J. Foyt, but any other particular personalities that you just enjoyed from a reporting standpoint?
Well, I was always partial to Johnny Rutherford as well. Johnny worked with us on the network for many years, and he's just a gracious guy and a good guy. And, gee whiz, you go back. I learned a long time ago. Of course, it's a lot safer now, but I was real good friends with Ronnie Duman and his wife years ago, and he was fatally injured at Milwaukee after the 500 the following week. And you learn after a while, you get close, but not that close, you know, because you get tired of that. But it's changed now. It's a lot safer now than it used to be, for heaven's sake. But I was always kind of partial. And Mel Kenyon has been a good matter of fact. One time I was Kenyon's agent for a couple of years, and we tried to help get him out in the community and that sort of thing. And there was another fine gentleman who had a wonderful record here at the Speedway. Raced 8 times, was in the top 5 4 times. So, just those guys.
And raced last Wednesday night at Mount Lawn Speedway, Newcastle, Indiana, by the way.
That guy, he won't give up. What is he, 73 now, 72, something like that?
I think he's 74 years old.
Yeah, and still running midgets. Wow, I can remember when Gene Hartley's father, Ted Hartley, was running midgets in his 60s, 5th year, I think. And I thought, boy, that's really old. Now here's Kenyon doing it at 74, for heaven's sake. That's amazing that they can do that.
Interestingly enough, Dave Wilson of others have put forth an effort to save some of the old radio broadcasts. I, for one, have 48 and 55. And even when I go back to 48, I'm really kind of surprised at the overall sophistication even then, really.
Yeah, well, Mutual Network was doing it in those late 40 days. Bill Slater, I think, was the guy who was here. And Sid, I think, helped them on that broadcast, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Okay, and then WIBC finally got the rights, and they had a loosely knit, unofficial official network in 52. And I think that's the mark they use. And the real official network officially was 53, but for all intents and purposes, 52. And it was kind of amazing, but I think at Mutual they were just doing cut-ins, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the very first one, just a series of cut-ins, maybe half an hour in length.
Yeah, and then they finally decided to go to the full race coverage, which was the right thing to do. I mean, again, this is the world's largest one-day sporting event. Why not?
I suspect a lot goes on behind the scenes that a lot of people just don't see in preparation for that event. It's not something we can just show up and turn on the mics and start talking.
Well, that's true, and they always expected us. Of course, when Mr. Hallman was alive, his goal was to have a person from every station. And that's probably how I got on from WIRE, because Ahern had done it, and he was gone. And then I went over to 6 and WFBM, and I was already on the network, so I got to stay, so I filled that. There was a guy on from WFBM before me by the name of John Peterson, who was the radio sports guy at that time, before Jim McIntyre came back from the Reds. And so that just worked out for me, I guess. But, they expect you to be out here a lot during the month of May, so you can pretty much look at a car and know who it is. And as the noses got smaller and the numbers got smaller, you had to learn more about colors than numbers, because a lot of times the numbers get wiped off in a wreck. Of course, in those days, what's happened, in those days, we don't even have a backstretch position, or they don't, on the network anymore, because in those days, you had to have a pair of eyes to cover the track. Now they've got a TV monitor in the booth, from ABC, which is fine, I guess, but it was, I remember Sid would always tell us, if you can't see it, call in on the IFB, and we'll give you permission to leave your position and go closer so you can tell what it is. And, of course, we never described the condition of anybody, because we're not doctors. And the Speedway officially did that, and that's just good practice, period.
I think it would be a proud moment to think that you're part of that linkage from the very first broadcast to be on that number of years until today, because you're part of the Speedway lore and history.
Yeah, it really is. Sometimes I'm just absolutely amazed the way people perceive me, that I don't perceive myself that way at all, but people will see, to some folks, it's really a big deal to meet Howdy Belt. I just don't really think that way about it. I was talking to somebody out here. They had their relatives up here looking around in the media center a couple of years ago, and next day they come up and said, you know, that was my brother and sister-in-law, and they were more excited about meeting you than they were being up in the media center. And I thought, what? You know, why is that? I've just been blessed, that's all. I was blessed to have that opportunity, and it's afforded me opportunities to go out and speak to a lot of people, and that's fun. I just enjoy that.
Tradition's important here, and we were able to see Tom Carnegie get out for the opening ceremony and do an interview with A.J. Foyt, and I think that's important to us.
Oh, there's no question about it. See, a lot of people don't know this. Tom Carnegie was my professor at Butler. You know, he ran the radio TV department when I first started at Butler, so we've known each other for the longest time, and I can remember as a kid listening to him as the sports director at WIRE. He was on for, I think it was Kingan's Meets, and he did a sports show every afternoon, like at 5:15 or something, and I used to listen to that. And as a kid, you thought, you know, boy, he's really big time. I wonder if I'll ever get to meet him or see him somewhere. And then I studied under him, took sports casting from him, and we had a lot of announcers from Channel 6 in those days that would come out to Butler and teach news and announcing and that sort of thing. But he's been a good friend for many, many years, and just enjoy him and his family and his wife DJ. And so I look at that as just a common thing, because I just know him for all those years. People on the outside look at, oh, you know Tom Carnegie? Wow, you know. So it's a different perspective. Sometimes we lose perspective of what's really going on in other people's eyes when they look at what you're doing, you know. But I enjoy it. Love being out here.
It's good to have you out here. Thanks for your contribution.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Pat.